Thank you, Jana. And actually, I haven't previously sent around the resources, but I would encourage you to have a look at the posters from the RN website. They are really good, and I'm happy to circulate those via the RNA email. So I'm going to pass you over now to Catherine Gregory, who's one of the nurses with the Martin Refugee Health Service, and Elfaz. Now, Elfaz, I'm afraid I don't know your surname, so essentially at this point you're like Prince or Madonna.
I know Elfaz's last name, but I just struggle to pronounce it. Exactly. Okay. The UNHCR defends the rights of LGBTQI plus individuals and recognises that refugee claims based on sexual orientation or gender identity fall under membership in a particular social group, which is one of the five grounds for protection enumerated in the Refugee Convention, UNHCR 2012. Hi, I'm Catherine. And it will be 6 years in June that I've had the privilege of working as a refugee health nurse for the Mater Hospital. Recently, in what started as small talk, I was at a coffee shop and someone asked me what I did for my job. And I'm always up for a chat and I really love talking about what I do. And so I said to them, I'm a refugee health nurse and this is my story. This was a gentleman in his 70s. And after my spiel, he looked at me and said, wow. And then he went on to say how lucky I was to have a job that I loved and also to be being educated by my clients while I'm working. It's true, I consider myself fortunate and richer in terms of cultural understanding, historical events and global issues, in particular the LGBTIQ plus movement. One client in particular has educated me enormously in the area of LGBTIQ. He's smart, funny, eloquent, and he's here today. I'd like to introduce Elfaz. Could you give him a warm welcome? So thank you so much for coming in, Elfaz. It's a big ask in front of an audience. So first of all, I'd just like you, Elfaz and I have been through this conversation together, but I'd just like you to give some background information to the audience, where you're from, where you moved to, your experiences in the country you moved to and where you came from. Things that happened prior to arrival in Australia.
Okay, so my name is Elfaz. I'm originally from Ethiopia. I lived in Nairobi, Kenya for the last 3 years. I seek asylum in Nairobi. Before I moved to Nairobi, I was living in Ethiopia and then I was working as a clinical officer in one of the health centers in the capital city. I identify as gay and then gender non-binary. While I was in Addis and then when I was working as a clinical officer, me and my friends, we saw that there is a gap in the sexual and the reproductive health issues of Ethiopian LGBT community. When I say there is a gap, the movement is non-existent. And then there is like, in regards to the human rights situation, it's like zero. It is being sexually diverse can land you in jail for up to like 14 years. And people of sexual gender diverse people are not part of the national health policy, which is a shame. So basically we have no source for like relating to health services. So me and my friends, what we started doing was, as I'm a clinical officer, I start translating sexual and reproductive health materials from English to Amharic. As you know, in Ethiopia, we speak Amharic, we don't speak English. And then most of these materials are available in English. So we translate those materials and then posted it on Facebook. We print some brochures, and then, you know, there are some few bars where our community members like usually go. So we go there and then give them brochures. We distribute lubricants and condoms. The lubricants, we usually smuggle those lubricants from Nairobi because the government will not, don't supply water-based lubricants. So we have to find a way to smuggle those lubricants and then distribute to the community. While we were doing that, me and my friends, we received a trade, so that's why I decided to seek asylum in Nairobi. After I moved to Nairobi, I did not stop my activism. I continued translating those materials and then posting those materials on Facebook. I used to give counseling for community members who have like issues with STDs and HIVs. Whenever they have like questions, I'll be like, you know, I'll give them information. Just go to a health center and then say this. Just don't expose yourself and then say, oh, I'm gay or lesbian. Just go there and then pretend as if you're a straight person, then like you'll get treated. Because while I was in Ethiopia, whenever we encounter someone with sexual and reproductive health issues, they would usually be referred to me so that I can, you know, see them in secret. I don't have to write their personal history on their patient card. I just write their case and then like treat them as such. So after I moved to Nairobi, I continued my work with UNHCR. I was a community leader for the LGBTIQ refugees, Ethiopian refugees in Nairobi. And I'm one of the founding members of a CBO. That CBO is mainly focused on giving a platform for skill development and then livelihood opportunities for LGBTIQ refugees. The refugee situation in Nairobi, is in Kenya in general, is very different from the one we have in Australia. Refugees in Nairobi, they don't have health insurance access. They are not allowed to work. You know, there are so many issues. So we raise some funds and then, you know, pay for their schools, pay for their health insurance. We also opened like a couple of beauty shops so that they can earn some money. And then after that, I was lucky to be processed into Australia. And then I arrived in Australia 7 months ago.
Lovely. Wow. So the next question is, how easy or not was it to find support services? And are there many in Brisbane?
In terms of social support, it is very hard to find social support services in Brisbane that specifically targets LGBTI people from the migrant background. I've learned that there are so many organizations and groups who cater for the LGBTI community, but not for the refugees. Yeah. There are many organizations who cater for refugees, but not for the LGBTI refugee community. So we are like in a middle where no one really focuses on our issues. So like it took me 3 months to meet with queer people from Brisbane. And then the first 3 months I was like, oh, what should I do? Because the issue with LGBTI refugees is, one, in order to access the services, there are so many barriers. One, language is, like, I am lucky that I can communicate with English, but so many of refugees, they cannot communicate well in English, so that's one barrier. The other one is culture differences. I personally don't fit into the Western culture. I'm not used to the Western culture, so I'm like, maybe, like, you know, I may not, like, find a friend who can, you know, who have the same interest as me. You know, that's the problem. The other one is LGBTI refugees. Even if we move here in Australia, like, I live away from my Ethiopian community because I don't want to go through those traumatic events in my country, because, like, I don't want to live the same experience in Australia, because in my mind, I know it's like a misconception, but in my mind, if I am close to the Ethiopian community here in Brisbane, I might face the same discrimination that I faced back home. So most LGBTI refugees, they tend to be in a closet because they don't want to be discriminated by their own community here in Australia. So you can imagine the trauma we are facing. So it wasn't that easy, but apparently my case worker from MBA, she told me that there's this new group it's a social group. So they are working on creating a platform for newly arrived LGBTI refugees to socialize and then make friends.
Mm. And so my next question is, what have you done, if anything, to further your involvement in the LGBTIQ community?
So after my caseworker introduced me to this new group, I am meeting with them regularly. Mm-hmm. So we're coming up a solid form of organization where people can come and they'll feel welcomed. It's multicultural. It is welcoming for everyone else, not only for refugees, but for those who are seeking asylum and then for those who are from a migrant background. We don't want to focus on refugees because at some point asylum seekers are being left out. So we want to include all that. And then we had a couple of social dinners.
Yeah.
And then, we're getting there, but
they're lucky to have you. Mm-hmm. And what would you like to see happen?
I don't want you to assume that this is what the whole LGBT refugees communities want. It's just my opinion. In my opinion, the first thing I would like to see is a collaboration between different stakeholders who are doing a work on LGBT and refugee issues so that they can come together and then see, here is the gap. This is what we need to work on. The first thing is collaboration. The second one is I would like to see a needs-based assessment, an assessment where, here are the needs and then this is what we need to do. There should be a proper form of research on what's needed to be done. The other one is community engagement.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Nairobi, so many NGOs are working on LGBT refugee issues, but they don't really involve us.
No.
So they are the one deciding, this is what you want, or this is what we're going to do for you. So it wasn't working well. So my suggestion would be engaging the community itself on this is what we want to do. So how can we?
So meeting with representatives from the community.
True.
And
then the other one would be, as Jana said, being proactive, especially in areas of the psychosocial support. I came from a country and a culture where psychological issues are not or are considered as a taboo. So we don't really talk about our mental health problems. So even if a refugee is not talking about, or he, she, they are not talking about their mental health issues, doesn't mean that they are not facing one. It's just we are not used to talking about our mental health issues. So I think service providers need to be aware of such problems and then need to be proactive in engaging community members on how they can be helped.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Alphaz has kindly agreed for me to open it up to the audience if anyone has questions about anything, related to Alphaz. Yeah. No? Nothing? Yes. Oh, okay.
I'm
yes,
not Leanne. Sure whether you can answer this question, but I'm wondering, we're talking mainly about adults in this space. There's a whole lot of youth who have gender dysphoria. I'm just wondering where that pathway may open up and whether schools can be part of that community to support our young people with a refugee background who come with a gender dysphoria.
Yeah, I mean, I think this falls on the areas of collaboration, because schools and educational institutions are part of service providers, and then they need to be educated, and then they need to be aware of the presence of these community members, and then they need to have like a proper resources to address those problems, I think.
Yes. Anyone else?
Yes. Hi.
Oh, Rainbow Friends. Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to discuss?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, Catherine, if you remember, the first time at my first doctor's appointment, my first question was like, where can I find an LGBTI-friendly doctor? Mm. Because my experience in Ethiopia is there is no such thing as LGBTI-friendly health practitioners. So I asked my doctor, and then she was like, well, like, all of us are... and if they're friendly health practitioners. And then I was, at first, like, it took me by surprise, because like I learned how she open she is. But then again, since I've been in this LGBTI activism, I'm not shy to ask questions, but refugees are shy to ask questions, because there is a cultural barrier in that language also. And then when you're a new arrival, you're afraid, like, you know, is it appropriate for me to ask questions or not? So again, nurses and doctors not assume, but think ahead what our needs might be, and then they need to be a little bit proactive, and then, you know, I don't know how to put it in proper English. Yeah, it's like being proactive, and then, you know,
yeah.
Sometimes.
Can I just ask something? So I do some health education with all the new arrivals, talking about general health stuff and just even accessing doctors and using your Medicare card and Centrelink card, what services are available, and talk about quite general. Is there any point in there you think that I could bring something up like that in an open forum? Because yeah, I did get asked to talk about to all of the men separately,
That's good.
Yeah. So I think we're kind of open to it. I think we are. But I just know, do you think there's something? I'm just really conscious of how to bring up that subject, especially if I'm already being asked to talk about lots of general things. How could I? Can you tell me in a culturally appropriate way?
Oh.
How could I bring
okay. So one of the things that I forgot to mention about like barriers of accessing services here in Brisbane, Queensland, is lack of information. Like for most of us, we don't have that information because we're new and then kind of confused like what available services are. So the first thing that we need to get is, oh, these services are available for you. So like, personally, if someone comes to me and then say, okay, Alfaz, these services are available, then the rest is, it is my choice to utilize those resources or not. But at the same time, as I told you, newly arrived refugees might be shy or they're afraid to access those services. It's just I think it's the way how the information is given. Like, I believe that it should be given in a way that's like not pushing, but
open and friendly.
Yes, friendly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe when I talk about, we have the sexual health clinic, we have the chest clinic, the TV, you know, we have all those clinics. Maybe I should mention any of that.
Yeah.
Sort of just along the lines of this is another clinic.
Exactly.
Michelle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Michelle, just check with SSI. I think what they've done is actually introduce the conversation when they do their orientation part, which is about the law. Because one of the laws they now talk about is that about the gay marriage law has changed Australia. That's been a really not really way to open up the topic. And people are really interested about laws and adhering to law. I think for our experience in Sydney with a lot of the caseworkers was that it really did change a lot of attitudes once that law was passed. It really, people did really change once they realised that the Australian government recognised these couples as a legal entity. And the comments that we were getting was, okay, well, it's the law, there must be okay.
Yeah, okay.
Oh,
I see.
So not to shift attitudes, so just check this as part of that.
How much do we have any more time? Or should we?
Does anybody else have any questions, or was there anything else you wanted to mention?
Not really. No. Thank you all for listening, and
thank you
thank you so much to LFAS.